global trends such as urbanization, digitalization, or changing economic patterns put increasing stress on the use and management of water resources. However, they may also come along with opportunities for increased water sustainability. Identifying and assessing the emerging challenges and opportunities is becoming ever more important in order to ensure water security and sustainable water systems in the future. The Trend Observatory on Water of the Swiss Agency for Development Cooperation, in short SDC, informs SDC's water network Réseau and all interested parties about important emerging trends and innovative approaches.
Hello and welcome to the podcast series of SDC's Trend Observatory on Water. I am your host, Annika Kramer. I am head of the water program at Adelphi, a Berlin-based think tank implementing the Trend Observatory for SDC. In today's episode, on occasion of the UN Climate Change Conference, COP26, we are going to talk about the important role that water can play for climate action. We will highlight recent trends in the global discourse on water and climate mitigation in particular, and provide some insights on the role of urban utilities, as well as rural and semi-urban sanitation systems for this. For this discussion, we have invited John Matthews. John is the executive director and co-founder of AGWA, the Alliance for Global Water Adaptation. AGWA advises national governments, corporations, the European Union and key financial institutions on water-related climate risks and resilience. Under Matthew's leadership, AGWA has also become the voice of the water community at the UN Climate Change Conference.
Welcome, John. Great to have you as our guest for the Trend Observatory podcast.
Thanks so much, Annika.
This year's UN Climate Change Conference, the COP26, for the first time ever, there was a dedicated water pavilion. It featured water and climate-related sessions full-time for the whole of 2 weeks. That, of course, is a great success in itself for showcasing the important role of water in climate action and also international climate policy. Now, from your perspective, and you took part in the whole 2 weeks, I think, what were the most important new topics or innovations that were presented and discussed at the Water Pavilion?
It's a great question, Annika. And I'll say that there's been a water presence at COP for a while, but as you point out, the real difference was having a kind of physical location. There are a couple of issues that I saw over those 2 weeks that really came out of having that physical space. One is that you saw the full spectrum of the water community. I think one of the groups that has been kind of absent traditionally in the water and climate space at COP has been the WASH community, and they are very much there in force. And that, I think, made it feel like the full choir was singing. You also saw a lot more discussion about water and climate mitigation, and especially around water and energy and the need for water resilience and low carbon energy to be seen as connected issues, something that was a bit new. So there's a dedicated energy day, for instance. I felt like that also was at least an opening that I'm hoping will grow over the future COPs.
Okay, that's really interesting, because I think up to now, the role of water in climate adaptation has been more recognized, and now the topic of water mitigation has received less attention so far. Can you give a bit more details or some interesting insights that you took home from the COP on the topic of water mitigation?
Absolutely. It came up in a number of venues, and not just in the water pavilion itself. For instance, there was a pavilion that was just focused on peat as a specific type of wetland. Peatlands are important as a kind of water storage, water quality components that they've often been viewed as a component of climate adaptation. But for the climate mitigation community, peat is also a massive reservoir of stored carbon and carbon sequestration. And it's one that can be unleashed as well. That was a big part of the peat pavilion. And let's say it kind of spilled over on some level on the water pavilion too. There were a number of hydropower sessions. And I think you kind of heard different viewpoints around hydropower. There definitely were some strong advocates for more hydropower as a form of clean energy. But there's also some controversy too, I'd say, that sessions and individuals that were stepping back and saying, actually, there are emissions that are associated with hydropower as well, especially storage systems. We need to think much more carefully about that. Actually, the resilience of large hydropower, its ability to continue to produce low carbon energy over the operational lifetime of these pieces of infrastructure is questionable in some cases, and we see widespread evidence of that in many countries, and potentially high risk in some countries like Ethiopia or China, Turkey, where there are new large installations that are going in now. And it actually, I think, led to some sensitivities, let's say, offstage. What I thought were some of the interesting insights there, too, is the water resilience, because water is embedded in so much of our energy systems, not just in hydro, but even in many types of thermal power and nuclear and some types of solar, that we need to think about water resilience kind of across region in our palette of energy choices, and how we might be able to partition water to make sure that we're thinking about it really strategically across those larger landscapes. And that's a very interesting issue, and I think helps us move from thinking about one individual energy generation site or facility at a time to saying, this is actually kind of a macroeconomic issue. It's a broader energy policy and a water policy issue that we need to think of at larger scales and try to imagine more carefully. So those were some of the ideas that I was really struck by.
Yeah, interesting. You mentioned earlier that this time the WASH community, so the water supply and sanitation community, played a bigger role than before. Did they also bring in some aspects of water and mitigation? I mean, there is some potential, of course, in the water supply and sanitation sector. Was it discussed with a specific angle that was new to you or that you think was popping up in the discourse?
That's a fantastic question. So WASH, the water supply and sanitation community, is itself quite diverse. And the part of the WASH community that has been present at COP for a really long time, even longer than I've been involved in COP, I've been attending COP since 2009, that are the water utilities. But if you think about rural and peri-urban systems, those are definitely newcomers in this space. So the mitigation side, they're often talking about methane. And methane was a big deal at COP this year. There was a methane pledge. There was a methane pavilion. Happily, it didn't smell bad. The methane got a lot of attention, especially kind of lower middle income countries that have significant rural populations. Climate mitigation components of WASH are something that can be really played up on. And I think many WASH groups are really starting to realize the potential that they have, in that it's an almost unrealized or unimplemented set of advantages that they can bring to many countries that maybe they thought most of their contributions were going to be around a new energy installations, when they actually may have significant carbon accounting that they can do a global processes through rural and peri-urban WASH.
Thank you. Yeah. Are there any examples or larger initiatives that you can give as an example?
One that I heard, it's a DFID FCDO funded program called Future Climate for Africa. It's a project looking in, I believe, rural Zambia, making different choices in how sewage is actually treated and handled in rural and peri-urban areas. And then going to the next step and trying to calculate what are the carbon emissions that are associated with it and how it's effectively digested and treated long term. I think that's actually really exciting to be able to see someone taking a broad insight, saying we need to make our programs better, and we're also going to quantify it, and we're going to embed it in the climate dialogue. And that's a chain of steps that has been really absent from much of the WASH community for a long time, which you also hear increasingly from the water utilities. If I could go a little bit farther into their work, they have potential to play a gigantic leverage role with national climate reporting, the NDCs, the nationally determined contributions, that are the kind of policy instrument that are the heart of the Paris Agreement and that became active this year, because these are very large scale activities. And their choices around aerobic versus anaerobic digestion of wastewater, about how they choose maybe to kind of harvest the methane to be able to use it as a kind of supplementary energy source. The GIZ actually has been encouraging that with some very interesting middle and lower income urban utilities. Those are very interesting innovations too. And the gap there is these utilities recognize that this is something that they need to do on their own, and in many cases haven't made that next step of trying to connect with the national authorities that report out to global authorities. There's still lots of work to be done in this space. I suspect we'll see more progress pretty rapidly just over the next year or two.
Yeah, thanks. Interesting. I think it's really good news that there are some efforts also to try to quantify the methane emissions also from the many rural and peri-urban sanitation systems in Africa, for example, because I think that up to now has really been missing in trying to make the point of how important that is also with regard to climate mitigation. Now, this was this year's COP. What's your perspective on next year's COP? Are you of good hope that there will be another water pavilion and the topic of water is going to play a role there as well?
I am extremely excited about next year. I think that there are maybe two trends that I see that are very promising. One is in the water community itself. And I can use the water pavilion as an example. I mean, in COP25 in Madrid, there were maybe 25 water events that the water was a primary part of the agenda. And there were more than 150 in the water pavilion alone. It was kind of continuous water TV if you were watching it at home. What that also meant was because of COVID, every event was really a hybrid event. And so each event was bringing in lots of other people that never would have gone to COP, never would have spoken there, never would have participated and been able to see what was happening. And I call it a one-way street that if people feel part of the COP process now, and they will insist on being involved. I think larger numbers of them will insist on being involved in the COP preparation and run-up and then COP27 in Egypt next year. I also think that that means that they're probably going to reflect back on their own work too and say, how do we make sure that our work is relevant, that it's comprehensible, it's coherent with what's happening in the climate policy community? There's this kind of activation element and socialization that's really critical. And I'd say at a structural level, you know, the host country plays a very important role with COP. The UK led, I think, to a lot of the success indirectly, the Water Pavilion, by saying that adaptation resilience and nature-based solutions are going to be two of the four primary issues that they wanted to emphasize. The kind of overall dialogue shifted in a very substantive way. Maybe almost half the discussions, the content was really about adaptation and resilience compared to mitigation. And water is at the center of that discussion. And I don't think that's going to go back. In fact, the strongest evidence really came from the Minister for the Environment of Egypt. The second day of the COP, I heard her say very directly that it was clear to her that priorities for COP27 needed to be water, nature-based solutions, and adaptation and resilience. So what was implicit in the UK will be explicit, I think, in Egypt. And water, as I believe it's finally, maybe rightfully assuming its place, should be at the center of much of our mitigation and adaptation discussions.
That's very good news. And I really look forward to then to next year's COP in Egypt and to see how the water pavilion will be there and your work as well. Thanks for sharing your views and insights with us.
Well, it's my pleasure. I'm really grateful to have been a part of this. Thank you.
If you would like to learn more about the topic of today's podcast and other important trends for the water sector, check out our Trend Observatory on Water website. You will find the link in the description. Thank you for tuning in and goodbye.